Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hi, Mark. You know, for all of our listeners around the world, we really do aim to give you the most accurate industry update.
You're right, Mona. We've been striving to give that accurate industry update for, well, almost 8 years now.
That's right. The latest phenomena which is going on in the United States with the EB5 program is that we now have a crazy amount of projects, EB5 projects available. Some of the headlines in blog posts relating to the amount of project exemplar petitions really have got the industry worried. And we're talking about, at the end of fiscal year 2023, a report from USCIS coming out with 250 projects. Now that we're into March and we're just about to face a fee hike, you can expect at least another 50 to be added. So with 300 projects out there, that's a lot of projects.
It is. It is. I remember back in the day, I think when we first started, there were many, many more, right? We've gone through cycles of projects in the past.
Right.
Didn't we have somewhere around 500, 800, something like that? I don't have the stats in front of me. It feels like that's what it was back in the day when we first started.
Yeah, but back in the day, we didn't always know exactly how many projects were really out there.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, because of F filings, it's much easier. Everybody knows exactly what's there.
F filing? That's a lot of alphabets. Okay. Does that mean they flunk? What's an F filing, Mona?
We have talked about it, Mark, for quite a lot, but okay. let me give you the brief 101.
Right.
So post the new law, the EB5 Reform and Integrity Act, which we lovingly call REIA, it was mandatory for all projects who wanted to raise capital to file an exemplar petition. And what's an exemplar petition? An exemplar petition is basically a petition with all the project documents, and they want to send that to USCIS in order to get an approval before the USCIS even adjudicate any of the investors' petitions. It really does make sense in the way that it reduces paperwork, it reduces time, and so far it's having good results. At the end of last year, the timing was pretty good. Rural projects were getting adjudicated much faster than TEA projects. The timing was about 12.8 months. But we've noticed that they're slowly, slowly creeping up and up. So there is a worry that with all of these new projects, instead of 12 months or 12 and a half months, it's going to be much more like 16 or 18 months. And again, that's going to lead to more than an over than 2 year adjudication for investors.
Right. Even with the fee hike, it's just going to gum up the works with everyone trying to get in before then.
Let's hope the fee hike means that they actually bring on some more adjudicators.
Yeah, I somewhat seem to remember in the past when they brought in a bunch of adjudicators and then Parkinson's Law came into effect and they took more time to review projects.
Yeah. Well, there were a few other factors which have delayed matters. But you know what? The best way to ascertain what the market effect is to really go and speak to somebody who is down in the trenches.
And we should really do that.
What, go down in the trenches or speak to someone down there?
Well, both. Speak to someone to go down in the trenches.
Right. Well, I thought we'd bring on Sam. You remember Sam, Mark?
I do.
Sam from BLS Global just had a successful event in India. He's probably one of the best persons out there because he does so much out in Southeast Asia to really understand how the investors are thinking. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mona. Delighted to be back on the show. I'm just glad that we're having a discussion about Southeast Asia and especially the shows that and the events that we've recently held in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh.
So, Mona, when we talk about Southeast Asia, where are we talking about? What regions? What countries?
Well, when I refer to Southeast Asia, there's a reason I say that. Because outside of the US, for example, in England, as Sam knows, when we say Asia, we mean Southeast Asia. But in the US, when we say Asia, we actually mean the Far East, which is countries like China and Korea and Japan. But Southeast Asia in the US really refers to India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Sri Lanka. I think you'll agree, Sam?
Yes, Mona, I completely agree. When we refer to Southeast Asia, we refer to India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka. Yes.
In England, we just say Asia. We don't really say Southeast Asia, right?
That's true. Everyone just says Asia. But when you go deep into Southeast Asia, I refer to it as India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, those kind of countries and jurisdictions.
All the ones which were actually part of the original British India, interestingly.
I mean, that was part of my history class. So we have to say that, yeah.
Okay, well, let me ask you, as you've heard us talk about all of these massive increase in projects, it's really is hard for the rest of the world to understand because there's so many of the other programs just don't include projects. It's real estate. But you've just done a very successful roadshow and an event somewhere in Southeast Asia. Where?
So we actually had a number of roadshows and we had a large event in New Delhi.
In India.
Yes.
Literally the hottest market out there right now.
We've gone Delhi, New Delhi in India. So yes, the hottest market and got national coverage and a lot of inquiries and a lot of people. It was just amazing. There was so much questions that were asked because with other projects, CBI programs, they're quite simple. You know, you invest in a real estate at a certain amount. But when investors are looking for U.S. immigration via the EB-5 program, there's a lot of due diligence that has to go into the projects. There's a lot of other factors where the attorneys are involved, you know, transfer of funds. So there's a lot of factors in order to make that decision. So that's why they really need intense and really good advice when it comes to making the decision for EB-5.
Yeah. So basically, you're not seeing any slowdown of interest in India for the US program.
No, we just had our event and it was just phenomenal. We do a lot of campaigns. Well, we see a lot of
When you say phenomenal, can you give us a comparison? I mean, how many people and what was the turnout in comparison to, say, an event that you might have done for the Caribbean countries or other CBI countries?
Compared to the other sessions, the EB-5 session was completely packed. We didn't have enough seating allocations and a lot of people wanted further details on the EB-5 program. And there was a point where we had to stop all the questions because we were, you know, broadcasting this. And it was just constant questions after questions. And it was actually the highlight of the event. Everyone's still... big demand, big push, especially from India and the other Southeast regions for the US EB-5 program.
Okay. So when I say to you, we 250 projects and climbing, maybe perhaps over 300 projects, does that daunt you that there's just so many projects?
It is quite difficult. That's why it's really important that people get the right advice and they do the due diligence and they want to soak in as much information as possible. Hence why, you know, your podcast here, Mona, it really helps because, you know, they get a fair understanding of what's required. You know, there's so many questions after questions, and it's just continuously, you know, there's so much that you have to absorb and gather to make, you know, a right decision for EB-5.
Is there a focus over there in India right now, for example, on approved projects? Are people, because I'm finding that a lot of people are not, they don't understand that they can file in a project before it's approved. It might take a year or 2 years to get approved, who knows? But is there a focus on that? Are people choosing rural versus urban? I mean, what are you seeing?
It's really how it's marketed. And what I've seen, there's very good marketing on rural projects. And you're hearing investors use words like I-956F. Is it approved? You know, they're looking at the I-829s. And I'm getting questions that are just like, we never expected to have like 5 years ago. So they're very knowledgeable. They've seen a number of their friends and family and their peers go through the EB-5 program, so they're really informed. Some of them really shop around, and there's a big demand for rural, especially from India market, not just Indians in India, but also Indians in Middle East and various other countries.
Well, you know, that's interesting because people are more aware, but there have been a lot of cases where things haven't gone the way you want them. I mean, there's been a handful of projects, if not more, where, for example, they've either collapsed or money hasn't come back. Obviously, there was a lot of post-COVID issues. Mm-hmm. Hasn't that slowed down any of the interest?
No. Honestly, no. You have to look at the current situation a lot of Indians are at. Okay, there's elections coming up. There's the taxation, uncertainties. Especially if you look at it, they are predominantly doing it for the children. So they want to make sure that their kids get the best education, and they always look out for the US for that opportunity. And EB-5 is still one of the best routes for such investors to get their green card.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You mentioned the election season. So I believe they've already had elections in Pakistan and Bangladesh. So we're only looking at India. Is that really something that makes a difference as far as investment and coming out into other countries, emigrating is concerned?
Well, they're very comfortable. But one of the key factors, what I'm finding now, especially with the financial year, as we know, there's a limitation on how much funds can be transferred over from India. So if you're an Indian investor and you want to move your funds, they're really targeted to get this done by the financial year. So the 250,000 limitations, which can be done by March, and then after March, they can do another transaction for another 250,000. So that's why a lot of people, especially from India, are really looking at to file now for EB-5 because of the potential political uncertainties, the tax year, as well as the TCS rulings that have come into effect.
What's a TCS ruling?
So anyone that makes foreign investment, there's a 20% taxation.
Oh, wow. So that's high.
It is high. And when you ask me the question, Sam, are you seeing a downturn or a decline? No. Even with the 20% taxation, people are still happy to proceed with EB-5.
That's really interesting. What is the focus on? Is it on just approved projects? Is it on urban? I know rural is the flavor of the month. How is urban doing against rural?
Well, I think they need to be a bit more educated with urban. The flavor, as you said, is rural because people have been getting approvals on rural projects and it's priority processing. There's more focus on rural.
Well, in the Chinese market, there has been a lot of chatter on the blogs that even though there is a faster processing on rural, the economics are better on urban.
That's correct. That's why we always advise the investors to really do a lot of due diligence on the rural projects or also on the urban projects. However, rural is very well marketed and it seems to be very favorable to the attendees that we've seen at our recent events.
Yeah, well, of course, that's just a blanket statement. It doesn't mean to say that all rural isn't as economically viable as urban. And of course, it works vice versa. But it was an issue before. And I'm just asking, is that still an issue that you see?
There is an issue. It's all case by case. It's all about timeline. If their children are going to turn 21, it's a case by case. And if they've seen approvals, there are a lot of investors that are looking at urban projects, but they also look at the projects and its track record and its history. So it's really a case-by-case scenario.
Are you seeing the same kind of understanding and sophistication from investors outside of India, from other countries like Bangladesh and Pakistan and Sri Lanka?
Yeah. When I'm saying, look, Bangladeshis, they have the funds, they have the means, they love the program. It's really about movement of funds. And they're not doing as much enhanced due diligence as the Indians are, but they do look at rural, but they also look at any good projects that are in a TA area. But if I compare the Pakistanis and the Bangladeshis compared to the Indians, I just feel the Indians are doing a bit more enhanced due diligence compared to the Pakistanis and the Indians currently.
Interesting. Well, I'll tell you what we are seeing. We are seeing a huge increase in Indian investors trying to do their own direct projects.
Yeah, it really depends on the investor. If they're entrepreneurs, the first thing they ask us is, why am I giving 800,000 to potentially a regional center? Why am I not capitalizing on this 800 on my own business? So that's where they really need expertise advice to look at the pros and cons. But that's the first intentions is, why do I, you know, I can invest that money in my own business. And why do I not take that business to the US?
Yeah, that's exactly what we've seen. We've seen family members where they have multiple people all join together and perhaps do a little regional center sort of filing themselves, but not go into one of the mainstream regional center projects.
Yeah. Their concerns are the job creation. That's where they feel the comfort with the regional center. And that's where they really need an expertise advice on the job creations, you know, economic reports. And if they get that comfort, I envisage more applicants will actually do direct EB-5.
Yeah, I think so too. And especially with the fee hike, which is one of my next question. has the fee hike made any difference as far as the popularity?
I think the fee hikes are with immigration in the other country. And now governments are realizing the value immigrants bring into the countries. Yes, there is a sense of urgency to file, especially with the fee hikes, for sure. And I'm actually seeing investors that are actually making travel arrangements now to go and see the project so they can actually make a quicker decision. So it has elevated and escalated the decision-making process, for sure. And I'm seeing more investors fly out, visit projects, and they really want to file ASAP, especially because of the fee hikes. And that does make a difference. And I'm going to see more trips, more petitions, and more actual filings.
When you say that you fee hikes in every country, are you talking about government fees going up, or are you talking about an increase of actual capital?
There's government fees have gone up on a number of immigration, like especially like the UK. Even like, I'm just comparing it for the CBI program, even if you look at Greece, that they're increasing their investment to 250 to 500, and they're actually going increasing the fees for the actual filing fees. Same situation with the UK, same situation with Portugal. So we are seeing fee hikes in various other countries.
I think the Caribbean is also going up.
Yes, there are more, especially for Iranians, if they are going to file for like Dominica, they have to pay for enhanced due diligence. So there's much more fees and also interviews now. So yes, there are much more, there's more fees associated to investment migration now for the citizenship programs.
Are we actually going to run out of millionaires?
I hope not. No, if you look at it statistically, China has the most emerging millionaires, then you have India, then you have the Southeast Asia countries. There's always going to be an appetite. And then we've still got other countries like Latin America, Africa. So there is going to be plenty of millionaires. The question will be soon, are we going to see enough billionaires?
I don't think billionaires would be so keen to jump into CBI. You know, Sam, this is all really good information. And I get it. You've just been to Delhi and had this wonderful big event. Are you noticing now that the in-person events are really more productive? Because I have noted that people are still doing Zooms and they're still trying to do the online stuff. I really don't feel that closes the way in-persons close. But what about these big events? Does it really make a difference?
It really makes a difference. You know, we're seeing an increase of registrations for these events, and these investors really look forward to attorneys, projects, visiting their hometown so they can actually speak to them directly and ask them a number of questions because they might be intimidated to ask a number of questions on Zooms, but when they're in person, they can actually ask certain questions and follow up on them because they have so many questions. And we've seen that there is a big demand for these large-scale events as well as roadshows, and it makes a big difference. When my team are on the ground, they still remember me and my dress code before COVID, and that's the impact that we have.
Yeah, but tell me though, isn't it dangerous? I know you're not just doing India, you're going into other, obviously lots of other places, and there are parts of Pakistan which perhaps are not safe.
Well, that's true, but they do strategically go to jurisdictions and cities where it's not like a red list. So they are very selective in kind of destinations that they choose, either be Islamabad or Lahore. So they're very cautious. So they do choose certain destinations that are you know, it's good for business because there's so much potential from like Dhaka, you know, Pakistan, as well as, you know, other jurisdictions. But when you go to beautiful places like Istanbul, or those are great, they're very comforting in those locations.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you did do a big event in Dhaka. I think it was just towards the end of COVID.
Yes, it was very successful. It was a packed audience and there was a big appetite, especially concerns of the elections. And there was a lot of up and coming millionaires and they really wanted to give their children the best education. And they looked at a number of citizenship and residency program as well as CBI. And another thing, Mona, as you probably know, is a lot of the people that are in Southeast Asia, they also happy to meet projects and developers actually in places like Dubai, where they're really comfortable to have an open discussion. So yep. A lot of times they come and meet you in those kind of jurisdictions.
So Sam, as I mentioned earlier, with all of these new projects coming in, these projects are not all people from the past. We have a lot of newbies, new developers and new projects and new regional centers. Do you have any advice for them going out and meeting with investors?
Yeah, I have a lot of advice for developers, new projects that want to raise funds through the EB-5 program. You know, they really need to understand the market. They really need to understand how marketing works. They really need to understand the effort that goes into finding investors. And especially culturally, it makes a big difference. As you know, Mona, you've traveled all over the world. It's so important that you hire the right people and you have the right collateral and brochures and marketing, and you get involved in our events. You know, that's what we do. We really educate you. And for me, it's they have to do the homework. They have to make sure that if they want to secure foreign investors for their various programs, they do provide a number of collateral and recruit a good team to enter those markets.
Yeah, it's a lot of effort. Sam, thank you for giving us your insights.
No, thank you, Mona. It's been wonderful being invited. I guess every time I only have a successful event, I get invited to these wonderful podcasts.
So, so keep up the good work.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.